Okay. So, interviewing Seamus Roper.
Hello.
So, Seamus, you said that your favorite class in high school is studio media.
Yes, it is.
And you have a project. What is your project on? Tell me about it.
So, me and my group, it's me and three other girls, we are doing a video project about bullying. And so, what I know so far about it is that I am going to be the bully in this.
You're going to be the bully.
I'm going to be the bully, yeah. And they gave me a name, too. My name is Jaden.
It should be Vinny Bruno.
Vinny Bruno. No, they came up with Jaden. They looked up annoying white boy names, and then Jaden came up. And then this other girl, Maya, in my group, has to be my girlfriend. Her name in the movie is Amber.
So we were talking before, and we were mentioning your studio media project.
Yes, we were.
Okay, so what... Shannon is in that group. Shannon is your ex-girlfriend.
Yes.
Is that awkward?
I mean, it is kind of awkward, but I think we've gotten over that awkwardness. But what kind of made me a little shocked, in the video, this girl, Maya, Shannon suggested for her to be my girlfriend.
Okay.
And me and Shannon were dating probably about a month ago before that. And I was confused.
Does Maya know that you guys were dating?
No, she does not.
Okay, that's interesting.
So, that'd be really weird if she found out.
And Shannon recommended that you guys be boyfriend-girlfriend.
In the movie, yeah.
In the movie. And do you like Maya at all?
I mean, she's a cool person, but I would date her.
You would date her?
Wouldn't.
How come?
I don't know. I'm getting over Shannon, so I'm not ready yet.
Okay. And now Shannon says that she broke up with you because she's not over her ex-boyfriend.
Yes, her other ex-boyfriend.
But you question this as being factual.
I am not 100% sure because it was just so out of the blue where she just texted me saying, "Hey, could we just be friends? I'm still getting over my ex-boyfriend." Right. When, like, the week before, we were having a great time. It seemed like nothing was wrong.
Right. But I will tell you, as an adult, that sometimes you can do that. And people will put that aside for the time being. And one week it seems like everything's fine. And then they go through something or something happens. And they end up... missing their significant other, their person who they were in a relationship with. So that does happen.
Okay.
But, so you've been training jiu-jitsu for 4 months now.
Yep.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
We've been doing judo with Sensei Joe Terciano.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really cool for me to have you meet him and be a part of his life.
Yeah.
What do you think of him, Joe Terciano?
He's awesome. I really do like him. He's very funny.
What makes him funny?
Just the, his slang that he uses. Just throw him down like a sack of potatoes.
His slang, right?
His slang that he uses when he's doing jiu-jitsu.
He's a funny guy. He calls people pineapple,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he calls people pineapple. I love that.
This guy's a pineapple. I kicked him in the pineapples. what do you think of... me and my the businesses, that whole thing?
I think it's pretty cool what you're doing because it's your own businesses that you're doing, and I think it's cool that you're making like a real, like, how do I put this, like, margin almost off of that. But you're it's like a circle with the stocks too that you're doing.
Oh, yeah? How so? Because
you told me that with the stocks and the money you make with the stocks, you pay for all the rent and all the bills from the yoga studios and the cafe.
Right.
With the stocks.
Well, that's what I want to do.
That's what you want to do.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
That's my goal. My goal is so that the so I take money from the businesses, mm-hmm. and then I feed it to my stock account, mm-hmm. and then hopefully that in those investments will over time be enough that yearly they can pay for all the rents. Mm. But then I would put myself financially in a position to say, okay, I'll pay for 1 year up front, but let's take off X amount of dollars for the rent, which would be really good. But what do you foresee yourself doing? Right now you're 14 years old, almost 15. Mm-hmm. What do you foresee you yourself doing as a job as you get older?
Good question. I've had ideas in the past, but I think really what I'm looking straight towards right now is marine biology.
Marine biology. Now, what makes you want to be a marine biologist?
I just think it's interesting how the ocean works, how just the food chain, how that works too. Like, starts out with plankton, then small bait fish, then big bait fish, then big fish come and eat those, and then the big predators like sharks or whales come in, they get those too. I like the chain of life. I think that's a very cool subject.
So when you're in school in biology, do you have this thought? Like that's something like, oh, I should pay attention here?
In some aspects, yes. There's a lot of things also with biology in general. Marine biology is just the tip of it. It's just a small part of just biology that they teach us in school. Teach about plant life, like land animal life, mammals. Teach us about reptiles. That stuff's cool, but marine biology, I do focus in on that in school.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, because you need to focus in on that, because that it's a biology degree. It's just a marine biology degree. Yeah. So, you know that stuff. But you said you don't like math, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
I do not like math. I'm not sure. Not a lot of people actually like math that I know of.
I heard this really interesting thing, though, so the human brain isn't logical. Like, we're not logical. We don't function on logic. We function on emotion, primarily. There is some logic, but not a lot. Mm. And we function more on emotion and things like this. So math is hard for us because it's logical and it forces our brain to work in a way that it doesn't want to work. Mm. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
I had a friend, though. I think I told you this. I had a friend. He was 20, probably 24, but to me at the time, he was, you know, this old guy, you know, because I was probably 15. And his name was Mike DeVanzo. And he said that he always took a math course in college, even though he didn't need to, because of it challenging his brain, like problem solving, to become a better problem solver in life. And he would practice that through taking a math course. What do you think of that?
I think that's a very smart idea.
Right.
I don't think all of us can do that, because
How come?
Just some of us aren't good at some things. Like your friend Mike, he might have been really, really good at math.
I don't think he was. I don't think he was. I think he told me that he wasn't.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Now, do you believe that you could do most anything? Within reason. Within the material realm of possibility. Do you believe that you could do anything you want?
Possible things, I think.
Do you think you could be a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
With time and effort, yes.
Okay. Do you think you could graduate college?
Yeah. Time and effort, yes.
Do you think you could play an instrument?
It's time and effort, yes.
Okay. Is there anything that you think that you couldn't do?
Put time and effort into anything, I think you can do a lot of things.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think about that sometimes for myself. Is there something out there that I wouldn't want, because there are things out there that I wouldn't want to do, right? Like, I mean, I don't want to, like, you know, become like, you know, a hitman or something like that. Yeah, you know, like, that's not my thing. Or I don't want to, like, sell drugs or something like that. But is there stuff out there that you would be interested in doing? And do you think that you couldn't do it? I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, time and effort. Those aren't my words. Those are your words. Those are good words. Time and effort. In yoga, they say this thing called abhyas and vairagya. Abhyas is practice, and vairagya means dispassion. So it means like, basically like, you take out the passion of it and you come to it every day and you do it no matter whether you want to or not. That's dispassion. Tell me about your favorite video game.
My favorite video game. At this moment, it's Battlefield 1.
Battlefield 1. Is this Call of Duty?
No.
Battlefield 1 is a separate genre.
It's a separate franchise, a separate company making it. It's DICE, not Activision.
Okay.
I like it because it has... most of it is historically correct.
What is the time period?
It's World War One.
So you learn about World War One while you play it?
Yes.
So tell me stuff about World War One. I often get confused with World War One and World War Two, and it's kind of like, as an adult, it's something I'm kind of embarrassed of that I don't know. I was like, was it Japanese or the Germans? Which one is it? So tell me about World War One.
World War One. Probably the most notable thing about it was the trenches, trench warfare. In World War II, there was virtually no trench warfare because it was...
Wait, define trench warfare. What is that?
So, what the soldiers, the infantrymen did, they would dig trenches, and both sides would dig trenches, and what they would do? They would send volleys of soldiers running across no man's land, which is no man owns it. No, it's the area between the two enemy trenches, which is basically like no man's land is death, basically. It's not a good place to be.
Okay.
So what they would do, one of the officers would blow a whistle, and then maybe 1,000 soldiers at once would just run across to an enemy trench. Whoa. And try to take that trench. And what would happen if one side took that trench, the enemy would start a counterattack and then take back that trench. And then this would keep going. And this would go on for sometimes years in some areas.
Seems like such a ignorant way to fight, to do warfare.
It's a horrible way. First off, psychologically, let's say the second or third wave of men comes into the entrance of no man's land. They see the bodies of their dead friends or just men in general. And psychologically, that means like, oh my gosh, I might die. And so that it interferes with what they've been trained to do. So in return, when they're forced to go, they die. And so this keeps happening. And this happens to both sides.
This is World War One.
This is World War One. And so what happens, if soldiers survive and they go back to the trenches, and they're like, they have... What's the thing that some veterans get when they come home from
PTSD.
War? They get... PTSD, but really quickly. And so they called it shell shock back then.
Yeah.
And so they can't do anything. They're just physically enabled. Adolf Hitler, he was in World War One. He fought. He got shell shock. So his body made him become blind.
Huh.
because he didn't want to see all the horrors.
Wow. Just
World War One in general. Another notable thing about it was poison gas. This is the first time poison gas was ever used. And when the first poison gas attacks happened, that no one was prepared for it. There were no gas masks made, so...
Who was dropping this?
The Germans came up with it first.
The Germans came up with it first.
So the Germans, in their artillery guns behind the lines, they came up with... It was chlorine and mustard gas, and they would shoot it over... It'd land in the enemy trenches, but enemies didn't know what to do because they didn't have any protection from the gas, so...
What were we fighting, though? Like, what was there our... What was the United States' reason for being there?
So, what the German... What we were doing, we were sending supplies over to Great Britain. And the Germans didn't want that, so what they did, they sunk a few of our ships.
Okay.
And they killed a civilian ship, which was carrying civilians. And this was the Lusitania or something like that. And probably around 1,000 American civilians died.
Really?
Yes. And another thing they did was the Zimmermann Telegram. What the Germans did, they sent a telegram to Mexico. So, the telegram said, if you turn against America, we will pay you greatly.
Huh.
And so, the Americans saw that as a sign of attack.
Right.
So what they did, they sent troops over to France at the time, and they... began the Argonne Offensive, which was a really, really big offensive by the Americans at the end of World War One. So the Americans joined in 1918, which was the end of the World War, First World War.
Wow.
So, because of this, not many Americans died. Well, I shouldn't say that, because 60,000 Americans died.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But compared to British, French, and Russian forces... The Russians lost 3 million men.
Wow.
The French lost 2.5 million men. The British lost 1 million men.
You know, we used to go to jiu-jitsu together over the summer in Lindenhurst, where, you know, I take jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
And we passed that road, Wellwood Avenue, where all the cemeteries are, and there's the military cemetery, and it's interesting because you see how many people actually have died. Yeah. And I mean, granted, it's probably hundreds of years worth of deaths, you know, but there's obviously thousands and thousands of people who have died.
It's
does that affect you in any way?
It gives a sense of realism and just really sadness. That
how so?
Like, thinking that, like, probably close to... In all the wars that we've been in for the past 100 years, since 1900, I think I saw this once. We've been in probably about 20 wars since 1900. So, I think we've lost close to 1 million soldiers, which is... Not a good thing to think about.
Well, I think too. I think they curb that by not actually calling it war.
Yeah.
They call it like Vietnam wasn't a war. They say it was the Vietnam conflict.
Yeah.
So I think they curb that, right? But so, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
So World War One, it was not good. Bad. The trench.
So
war,
wait, hold on one second. So what do you think happens to us when we die?
When we die? That's a good question.
Yeah, right?
When we die? I've had theories go through my head. But, I mean, there are a lot of theories. Some say you go up to heaven. Some say you get reincarnated. Some say you get reborn. Right. You, like, the light at the end of your tunnel, at the end of the tunnel, is just you coming out again as a baby.
Right.
I saw this other one once where when you die, it's like a cinema.
What do you mean?
So when you die, you find a seat, you sit down, and it's a cinema screen, and then you watch your next life with all your other...
Wait, hold on. So let's go back. So I die, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm I then go to a cinema.
Basically.
And I watch my life with you. I see all that, ooh, all that stuff.
No.
What do I see?
You watch your next life.
I watch my next life.
Yeah. With all your other ancient relatives.
And then I decide which life I want to go into?
That's all I've read about it. I think you just watch all your lives. And for all I know, there are 100 people watching me right now.
That's pretty wild.
I know. I thought of that. And it's questionable, but, I mean, anything is possible. Really.
Well, hey, if there's one thing that we know, it's that we don't know what happens to us when we die. Anything's on the plate, right? Yeah. You know, on the table. You could say something that's kind of way out there, but it's real. Yeah, or it has potential to be real.
Now, I have a question for, what's your stance on this?
Well,
do you believe in reincarnation, or are you mixed?
Like I said, for me to say that I know would show some ignorance, because I don't know. I can only say what sounds reasonable to me and what other spiritual masters maybe have put forth. Mm. So for me, I do enjoy that. That process of learning what other people who have said, who I think have kind of a different viewpoint or different karmic load than me. Like they have a little bit of a lighter karmic load. So they're a little more advanced spiritually than me. And so I can get behind reincarnation. It makes sense to me. Plato believed in reincarnation. The Greek philosopher Plato.
Yeah, I know.
They called it transmigration of the soul. That's a nice way of saying that. But, you know, and obviously in Indian thought, there's reincarnation, which does make sense to me, because there is a certain level of reincarnation that happens in this life that I've seen, like even within the way I think, or how I've changed over the years. But I am in this vehicle, this same vehicle, but my body has changed. I've reincarnated within this body, meaning that one day, you know, I was 15 years old at one point, just like you. I was, you know, 7 years old. I was in this little tiny body. I was even in a smaller body at a point. I don't even remember, right? But like, maybe my body will get older too, and I'll be in that, an older version of this body. It's very interesting though how my body has changed. I've reincarnated in this body. Now there has been a continuum, which is could be called my consciousness. So Eleanor Roosevelt had a saying. She said, they asked her about reincarnation, and she said that I don't think it's any more bizarre for me to take birth in another lifetime than me having showed up in this lifetime. Right? Like, how do you explain why you were even here? I mean, even just that thought. How did you get here? Where were you before? These are interesting questions, right?
Yeah. Now, on top of that, the human population count keeps going up, right?
Correct.
But where do those souls come from? Do they come from past lives? But
so according to yoga, different planets. Now this is being confirmed by astrophysicists, that there are these different, that the universe is much bigger than we ever thought. Mm. And there's more planets than we thought, and there's more solar systems than we thought, you know, and that's very interesting. So they, in the Vedic understanding, the yogic understanding of this, there's life on other planets. And some of these stories even come from other planets. Like, so there's... to wrap your head around that, so it's not like there's a finite number of souls for the Earth, you know, the Earth, which they call Bhumi Dev. She's a goddess, Mother Earth. But, you know, it's our universe, you know, houses many different planets which could have different life on it. And it's like that movie Interstellar, where you have like, you know, you have like, he goes into that other world, and it's like a world of, it's just the water, right? But the gravity is different on that planet, so you get these huge waves because the gravity's different. But then time is different too because of the gravity. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy.
but what do you think that that's crazy?
I think it's absolutely.
But could you believe in it?
Could I believe in that there are other planets housing, like, basically human souls?
Well, does it have to be human souls, right? It could be souls, yeah. Like, our human body, you can think of it like this. Our human body is meant to live here, right? Hmm. But what if I told you that...
there are, like, thousands of others, so...
Well, other planets are going to have different material laws. Like, we have laws here that require... I mean, heck, you go to the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. The law of the ocean, to live in the ocean, is different than the law of living above land.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like we have a whole different universe just outside, you know, in the water. So imagine that you go to, what to speak of, a different planet. Now you go to a different planet. Isn't that wild?
Crazy.
So what do you think of that?
I mean, it could be possible, but... is there a finite number? Well, it's the universe, so it's basically infinite. So there are infinite numbers of souls. So.
And then we had that conversation, that great conversation in the car the other day, about that that it might not even be a universe. It might be a multiverse.
Yeah. Multiple universes.
Multiple universes, right?
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I think it's possible.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. I think it could definitely be.
Do they teach you that in school, anything about that?
Not this deep. Definitely not. But the Science Channel, absolutely.
You learned it from watching the Science Channel?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's where it's basically where I know all this stuff about. When I was younger, I used to watch so much of that area, like the History Channel, Science Channel, Animal Planet. I was just so into that. That's how I know so much about World War One, World War Two, the Cold War, and stuff like that.
It's not the video game. I thought it was the video games.
It's the video game, too, that I like about how it's historically correct.
Right.
But I just love learning about past things and how things were done back then. I think that's very interesting to me.
It's cool.
Like, for example, today's warfare is much different than World War One's warfare, because...
Right. The weapons are different.
Weapons are much different. We have automatic weapons now. Back then, there were limited amounts, and we had rifles that weren't very good. But now we have these obsolete weapons that dominate the battlefield.
I was talking to my friend Nardu yesterday, and he's a lifelong martial artist and a great human being. And we were talking about how warfare... like, when we were coming up, me and him doing martial arts, doing kung fu, it was always like secret techniques and stuff. Mm. And we talked about it, you know, because before that warfare, your secret technique was your hand-to-hand combat and your weapons fighting. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the modern-day missile or something like that. You know, that's how wars were won and lost, was by hand-to-hand combat or weapons fighting. So... I mean, you go from weapons fighting to then there's firearms. And now there's drone strikes and whatever, you know, and we have aircraft carriers and submarines and, you know, each step along the way, it's interesting how it evolves.
Definitely, yeah.
Seamus, thank you for having this conversation with
me. No problem. It's great. Okay.